Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. We're always looking for people out there that are running for office and actually doing so to serve and help and protect we, the people of the United States. And an amazing man is running in Washington State for AG that can make a big difference in this country. And I'm excited to welcome Pete Serrano to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Hey, Mel. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to chatting and looking forward to serving the state of Washington.
Oh, and they need you. Okay. They need you. It is really, we've gotten to a place where there's certain states where you look at it and you think, what is going on? So first and foremost, let's tell the audience a little bit about your background, because you've been really proactive in trying to right a lot of wrongs behind the scenes, even before you decided to run.
Yeah. So my law career kicks off 15 years ago, where I actually started in a water litigation firm in DC. And I learned there that it was really important to challenge the administrative state. We actually sued the EPA on Clean Water Act rulemaking, whether it was on behalf of farmers for confined animal feed operations and rulemaking related to that, or small municipalities where the EPA said, hey, you know, these standards that are easily met by large municipal treatment plants, you 10,000 person municipality have to drop, you know, $200 million in a treatment plant. And to bomb that kind of level at 10,000 per capita, as you know, that's just, it's untenable. And a lot of these folks are middle class or even less. So, you know, 15 years ago, I still remember a conversation with my now deceased grandfather, who, you know, he was a first generation immigrant and a teacher and a military guy. And I thought, man, how do I explain what I'm doing to him? I said, well, Grandpa, I sue the government to keep him in check. He kind of looked at me for a second and said, well, isn't it great that we have a country that allows you to do that? And I was like, ooh, all right, that's where I was hoping the landing would stick. And I've kind of carried that with me for the past 15 years. Bounced around, did a lot of environmental work where I was permitting some critical infrastructure projects throughout Central and Southern California. Wow. And even up here in Washington. And then 9 years ago, I landed in Washington State to help the cleanup of the Hanford site. For the listeners not familiar with that, that's the United States Department of Energy. It's a 500 plus square mile site where they produced plutonium for World War II and Cold War weapons. Yeah. And so there's this really awesome history at the Hanford site. But in addition, it's got an operating nuclear generating station. And that's a separate state project. So I was with DOE, Department of Energy, for about 4 years. And then I slid over to the state agency, Energy Northwest. And I was in-house counsel doing compliance, learned a lot about Public Records Act, which is our version of Freedom of Information Act. And really how to be open and transparent with the public. I thought Energy Northwest did a reasonable job with that. And so not suing the government for public records, now I'm defending the government and producing them. And so it's like this full circle thing. And then just before COVID hits, I had actually slid out to be the lead permitting specialist for new nuclear. So we were actually going to bring this country's first small module, and still a project in works, small modular reactor into the United States, plant it in Richland, Washington, and, you know, push out power from there, which, you know, I mean, we don't want to get into nuclear energy, but it's got a tremendous amount of benefits. Right. I saw that as where I was going to hang my hat for my career. Then COVID hits. At the time, I was a city councilman, city of Pasco, where about 80,000 people, 75. I'm now the mayor of the city, and I'd been on council for a couple years, and I looked at one of the guys to my right, and he is a small business owner. He owns a tool shop, and he was telling me how he was being squeezed by the COVID regulations of, you know, social distancing. But, you know, closer to my house from his shop was a Lowe's, right? And it had like 10 times the store space, and guess what? That meant 10 times the people were in there or more. And I thought, geez, you know, if David can't open his store at X percent capacity, but that same volume, allegedly this aerosolized, you know, particle, I got, you know, 10 times more people in Lowe's, shouldn't I be getting a 10 times infection rate? And shouldn't the government be more concerned about more contact,
Exactly.
not more spaced contact.
Right.
And so, you know, that really hit me as like, this isn't adding up. I had a guy who owned a pizza place that's a staple in our town. It's been like a multi-generational business. He calls me and says, "Hey, councilman, I know you're a lawyer. Liquor Cannabis Board is coming in here," because he has a liquor license. So he sells beer and pizza.
Right.
And Liquor Cannabis Board's here to shut me down because I didn't force masks on my patron. And I'm like, hold on, something's not adding up. You're not telling me the whole story, Dean. What did you really do? And he's like, no, seriously. They came in, these guys were obviously kind of obnoxious, both the agents and the patrons, and rightfully so from the patron side.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, look, you know, we will take your liquor license if you don't force these people to wear masks. And it's like, it was silly because, you know, I'm sure you remember the days where it's like, you're supposed to eat your food and then chew it with a mask on, right? And then drink your drink and then put your mask on. And it's like, and so, you know, that really kicked me off into, come on, this is not true management of a disease. There was something wrong with what was happening. And so from that, I got actively engaged with local restaurants. We had some 40 people, or I mean, this is like 2021 we're talking, and state senators and state house members, we all were writing letters and really pushing back on the Liquor Cannabis Board's so-called authority or alleged authority, usurped authority, whatever you want to call it. And that's really what kicked me into this. And honestly, what really got me hooked in standing for these rights was I have three kids. They're 10, 8, and 5 now. And my 10-year-old was in second grade. We found out later that she's got dyslexia. We knew she was struggling with some learning, but when her teacher was, you know, Charlie Browning it, right? Like, wah, 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 she got stuck. And had we not, let me restate that, had my wife, I was kind of like that typical dad trying to make a living. Had my wife not been extremely proactive, I think my child would have been lost. Obviously, she would have been with us, but you know what I'm saying? Lost.
Yeah,
in the
sure.
Education.
Millions of kids were lost, and a lot of them didn't, unfortunately, have parents that really understood what was happening, and now they're paying a huge price. I think it's really important. We don't see that many people like you that actually have been on both sides of the government, in the weeds, in the thick of it, especially when it comes to these regulations and what's going on. You know, a lot of people believe that the EPA and the USDA and the Department of Energy aren't constitutional to begin with, and that, you know, there shouldn't be this overriding agency. But even if there are a lot of people, even before COVID, certainly during the banking crisis in 2008, a big aftermath was a whole bunch of regulations for the small banks that somehow survived. Then they couldn't survive or keep up with the regulations or fighting the regulations. And I'm sure that happened at the EPA and Department of Energy. And now it's on steroids. So with all that you've done, as you've watched the O'Biden, I call him, administration come in, especially because you were in energy and you were in environment. I mean, these are the two places they went to. They went to work, destroying what they could. What have you watched happen to both of those different, first environmental, when it comes to the Green New Deal, the infrastructure deal, everything that's happening there, and then after, second, energy, because they've gone after, but those are their two targets, it seems.
Yeah, you know, it quite frankly, it just feels like a money laundering scheme, right? You know, and I'll tell you this, at Energy Northwest, we did nuclear, we had hydro, we had solar, and we had wind. The primary was nuclear. The secondary was hydro. You know why? They only turn off when we tell them to turn off. Water runs down the Columbia River. You know, you're talking about, you know, billions of gallons of water. You don't just shut the Columbia River down, right?
No. Yeah.
If anything, you get a flood and it speeds up, right? And so, you know, in looking at where we were at Energy Northwest, we knew that to make sure that you and I, well, obviously you don't live here, but, you know, Joe customer and Jane customer, including myself, had adequate power resources, we had to have those staple projects, whether it was the dams or the, you know, via the hydro or the nuclear products. And so when you see the money invested in wind and solar, it's like, why What's our problem with nuclear? That stuff gets buried. It gets in encased in, things that are like 6 feet thick concrete walls. It's not like this is unsafe. Yeah, Chernobyl happened. You know why? Because they weren't well regulated. And that was 40 plus years
Yeah,
ago. So,
exactly.
we have, and back to your point, maybe the administrative state shouldn't exist. And certainly it shouldn't dabble in as much as it does. But I will say, from a nuclear standpoint, you are regulated, extremely narrowly. Like, hey, look, you got to turn this an eighth and it's like a ninth. Well, okay, let's turn the dial back, right? And
Yeah.
so it's a very safe product. So to say this Green New Deal of electric cars, that sort of thing, is going to save us, it's not, because where's the cost to produce the elements, right? Whether it's a battery,
Right,
whether it's the
exactly.
electricity that you have to plug into, you're still having some generational source. So why not use something that's constant? Like, again, I'm not advocating specifically for something, but nuclear and hydro are always on.
Yeah, they should have been the main targets. I actually saw a documentary that Oliver Stone made about nuclear. That's how I know anything about it. And you're watching it, you're thinking, what are we doing? And you want clean energy. Well, here's clean energy for you. So wind and solar, they're not reliable and they don't really do enough to keep things going. And then again, most people can acknowledge that the disposal of these products is a whole problem unto itself. Itself for the environment. So, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, a lot of it. And then putting John Podesta and John Kerry in charge of doling out money for these projects is another whole level of insanity. But the war has been on both of those things, this whole environmental Green New Deal, mentality, and then the energy, and both of those things, really hurt the individual person at the end of the day. A lot of you can separate from everything else, but it's very hard to separate from that. So what you have done also is you have a group, Silent Majority, that you guys started to look at what was going on. And I think a lot of people around this country wonder, we're probably around the same age. When I was thinking about grad school, like one in four of my friends I went to NYU, went to law school. I swear to you. Most of them because they didn't know what else to do and they could get in. I feel like everyone took the LSAT that I went to college with that wasn't in the arts. And there's so many lawyers out there, a lot of lawyers that don't practice law, a lot of lawyers that went into law thinking one thing and realized when they got into law that, they weren't, Superman saving America and liberty and freedom or whatever the case may be. There's also a whole slew of legal workers, paralegals. And it appears that only a small handful of American lawyers are doing things to kind of help the country, to fight for freedom, to fight for what's right, to fight for all of that. So let's talk a little bit about the group that you guys started and what your mission has been.
Yeah, so at Silent Majority Foundation, we've been in existence for 3 years, and it literally started around my kitchen table. I had a couple of friends who were non-lawyers. One's a police officer, a couple of business guys, and we had met because I had worked on the recall of
Oh,
still
great.
governor, Jay Inslee. He's only got a few more months, and God willing, we'll replace him with a good
Yeah.
conservative governor. And I was working on the recall of that, and I met a couple of guys, and we started talking, and hey, we need to fight, we need to fight, we need to fight, because they were seeing the administrative state come down on their businesses or their friends' businesses. And so we talked about it and said, hey, look, why don't we start a nonprofit organization whereby people can, donate to this organization to stand for its rights? And we had talked, and we landed on the name of Silent Majority Foundation because we wanted to be that voice of the silent majority. Where we can, we'll train you how to speak to your school board or your local
Right.
city council or whatever your issue is. Where you're not comfortable with that, we'll kind of ghost write some stuff and maybe have you submit it. And then the next level is always, at the end of the day, we know, to your point, lawyers need to stand up and have litigation. And so we thought that was one of the things that kind of separated us, was educate, advocate, and then when it doesn't work, litigate. And we've seen it where we've had a phenomenal education and advocacy piece where a single mom was told, this was back in COVID,
right,
she couldn't go protest masks on her kid's campus. And they actually had the sheriff trespass her. And so she called up and said, hey, I'm getting a hearing later this week. I said, it was across the state. I'm like, I can't drive 4 hours and lose 8 hours of travel plus do the hearing. But what I will do is I'll ghostwrite everything. You take it to the judge. And, you know, basically it was, listen, you know, Your Honor, we're at step four in a four-step process when you trespass me. Step one should have been this. And the judge actually looked at it and laughed at the school board's counsel. Said, why are we even here? And so she calls me and says, hey, look, we succeeded. I'm going back to school. I'm picking my kid up and I'm going to protest and not wear a mask. Right. So,
well, that's what we got to do. Yeah,
it is. It is. And we have to activate people. You know, that's kind of the fourth element, that because we're so busy in the courts, to your point, there are a few of us. We've now grown to five attorneys and three staff people. Yeah. I mean, we've been totally blessed. This has been awesome. We've grown and we're taking on, I was actually doing like a fundraiser email that I was working on with our team on. I realized we've had about 36 or 37 litigation pieces over 3 years.
Oh my God. Wow. And yeah. That's the thing, is that you guys are doing that and kind of standing in the gap. You would hope that there would be a group like yours in every single state, even better, in every single county. And the fact that there's not, well, the best part is that you guys sat down, you decided to do it, you did it, and it's been effective and it's worked. And maybe people need to see what you guys have done out there that are, you know, maybe when you guys started 3 years ago, or when I started my show 4 years ago, there was a handful of people that got it. It really was a silent majority. But at this point, after watching, especially the Lawfare coming out, which as a lawyer, and I'll talk to you about that in a second, is so disturbing on so many levels, the weaponization of the legal system through Lawfare by a handful of people in DC that have a lot more power, I believe, than our government right now, coming through NGOs and all of that. So I wanted to ask about that too. But in the meantime, I do want people to understand, if you go look at the model on their website, even if you're not an attorney, you can put together a group, like he just said, at his dinner table, bring in one attorney or two, you know, or there's so many of them, you know, it's like, and they're all feeling the pain too. And now we have the whole thing going on with the ABA and all of that. So they're getting squeezed on all sides. There are people out there, they just kind of need a model, and you guys created a great model, and you really lay it out there and give everyone the tools, which is so important. Now, I think that another thing that's going on here is that people are more and more looking at the idea that we have like a fourth branch of government that is unaccountable, that is unconstitutional, that kind of was spawned out of the Patriot Act, but it's obviously an intelligence group, you know, your DHS, TSA, DNI, and then they work, you know, and this, and the government has been very weaponized, and they say that it's not true, but it's very obviously true. So it also appears that, you know, we have a lot of things that are on the national level that need to be addressed as well. What are your thoughts on the what has happened with the intelligence? You know, we're all, the biggest example, obviously, is them still kicking in doors with SWAT teams from the FBI of people that didn't even enter the Capitol on January 6th. There was just a whole nother bunch of arrests this week. So what is your take on that? I know that there have been people in Washington state, of course, who have been arrested in that sweep. What do you make of that? And is there any remedy to what appears to be an out of control kind of, you know, intel agency that isn't working for the good of the people?
Yeah, let me jump backwards real quick, right, because he talked about, you know, replication of Silent Majority Foundation. One of our goals is to create such a tool that we call it Silent Majority Foundation in a box, SMF in a box.
Great. Cool.
So we are working with folks, particularly right now in Florida, to see what it looks like, because we do have some clients that have relocated to free Florida instead of, you know, Washington state. So,
like me.
So we are looking at that. And I guess my plea here is to any attorney or any activist who's like, hey, I love Silent Majority Foundation. You can find us on the website, smfjb.org or silentmajorityfoundation.org. And to Mel's point, look at what we've done, how we structured it. If you want to get in contact, just shoot us an email like, hey, I want SMF in a box. I've identified three attorneys in my county or in my state that are like-minded, you know, and some of them are not interested. They can make a lot more money not working for a nonprofit. I get that, and still fighting. I've got some freedom fighters that I stay close with. But yeah, I guess my plea is anyone that looks at it says, I think I can replicate this. Please reach out, because the more SMFs or SMF-like organizations we have, the better off you and I will be, our kids, our posterity. So that's just kind of my like little shout out for it is doable. It's intentionally easily replicated.
Yeah, when I was on your website, that's what I kept thinking was we need these in every county, every state. And I left Manhattan for not that long ago for free Florida. So now that you put that in my head, I'm already thinking of what lawyers I know. Plus, there's a lot of retired lawyers that, you know, people retire and they think it's going to be great and then they're bored. So, you know, there's lots of people out there and you have the model, which is awesome. And we're obviously going to put it below here in a link. But now I'm thinking about after the show, I'm going to be calling people and saying, listen, I have an idea for silent Good. Majority Florida. The obvious out of control, unaccountable, and basically it looks like zero oversight fourth branch that is turned on the people everywhere, including in Washington state. What can we do about that, if anything?
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Yeah, and I mean, I know it's not a great answer, but you know, it's one of those where you have to do two or three things effectively. One, where rulemaking comes out, you have to be vocal, you have to oppose it. Again, you know, when stuff's brought to our attention, like the liquor cannabis thing, they tried to make rules and we opposed it. And I literally, I went to my local county Republican Party and said, hey, there are 40 of us in this room today. We each know at least 5 or 10 people. Let's flood them with this. Guess what happened? They flooded them and they didn't put the rule out. So that's exactly an answer to rulemaking. You and I have a voice. We need to express it. Now, the other obvious answer is to litigate. Now, the problem is when your door's getting kicked in by the FBI, or even if they're nice to you and carting you off, doesn't matter how it happens, you have very limited time to think and be prepared. So, you know, to the extent, I guess, that folks want to be prepared, make sure that you have that one conservative lawyer that you can call and say, hey, look, this is happening to me. Obviously, I don't want to plant that in everybody's head, but that is... what we have to do. And then we have to have the ability. Part of the issue with what we've seen with J6 is there's not been an opportunity for these people to have fair hearings. And I don't just mean that like they're stacked the deck of these administrative states are overruling them. Yes, they are. But they are also, you know, here in Washington, we're seeing what's being called the defense attorney crisis, because we don't have enough public defenders. We don't have enough defense attorneys. Criminals are being let out. The exact opposite is happening from a political prisoner standpoint on J6.
Right.
You know, these guys and girls are getting locked up and sometimes without counsel for a year, years on end.
Yeah.
And I've talked to some of these folks. I've talked with some who have been, you know, softly contacted by the FBI and they're like, what do I do? I've told folks I'm a little gun shy to jump right into that. I do know I have a couple of people on speed dial that have reached out that are attorneys that are doing these cases, former federal prosecutors. So they know the ins and outs of the system. So, you know, I try to keep my network as expanse as possible so that, you know, if you know, better call Saul, right? If he can't do it, Pete knows a guy, right?
No, that's good. But I mean, the thing, I think it's even a bigger thing is what happened to the Department of Justice and to the the rule of law. I mean, just watching the cases that have come against Donald Trump, let alone, I've done shows on it. There's about 800 people so far, some lawyers, some not lawyers, that have either questioned the election, worked with or around Donald Trump or any of his allies, that have been so lawfared to death over, you know, novel charges that aren't even real. And the lawfare is so vile. It's so cruel. And it doesn't seem to follow the rule of law. I think a lot of people in America are at a place where they're just like, there is no justice system anymore. It's really whatever they decide it is.
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, there's, you know, the biggest issue is you have the resources of the government, right? You know, which are unending. They'll literally print money if right. they need it, or they'll pretend like money doesn't exist and spend it. And then they'll try to take it from you by garnishing wages. You know, or forcing more taxes. And that's really the issue is, I'm not going to say it's not something that can win, because I'm a firm believer at the end, the right will win. And I don't mean that the political right, like
I agree.
The correct, true and correct principles went out.
Right.
But it's the suffering that you and I and others who are directly involved that have to be, you know, and when you highly politicize an agency and you don't put any parameters on it, it's terrifying to the people. And yep. you know, people are waking up to it. As to what's the solution, I'll be honest, I really don't have a good solution there, other than try to turn over those seats.
Well, this is also why you becoming the AG and having so much experience dealing with these agencies. The problem, I think, a lot of times is people are coming at it without the knowledge of how the government works. And so you see people trying to go up against it. And then there is also a whole bunch of NGOs and groups like Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington and States United. And a lot of the same people that were involved in all the litigation of Trump when he was president are now involved in these other groups. And it looks like when people like you and other people go and bring legislation, especially about elections and things like that, that these really well-funded NGO lawyers come in and then, you know, the money, you can't compete with that. And they just keep putting in motions and all this. So you look at somebody like a Mark Elias, or that's showing up in every state fighting anyone that's trying to get, you know, ID needed to vote in America. And then that person is turned into a pariah by these people. And it just seems so out of control. So as AG, I guess you do have a little bit of an opportunity to do something, but it just seems so, it doesn't seem like it should be legal, and yet it continues.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, it shouldn't be legal. Those should be sacred resources, right? Okay. Not used at the political whim of an individual or groups. I mean, when you see Southern Poverty Law Center designating right. a particular group or individual as a hate group or hate person, and then the government goes after that individual, mind you, SPLC has, you know, I think some $700 million plus right. in assets.
Yeah.
And where we know where that comes from, the Soros types entities.
Yep.
You know, when you're looking at that, it's terrifying, because they work in tandem, in lockstep, and we've never seen this level of persecution and prosecution. You know, back to your point of me running for attorney general in Washington right. state, the whole purpose there is to say, hey, look, I make the joke to, you know, sometimes to some of my close friends, listen, I could take a nap for 4 years, fire all, the office is $700 million a year and 1,200 staff.
Wow.
If we just fired everyone and I slept for 4 years, like, what a huge dent that would put in the machine, right? Like, yeah. If you could stop it,
yeah,
you know, just put it on pause, that's a tremendous win. And I'm not even talking about utilizing those resources to fight against it, right?
Right.
I'm just talking about, like, literally doing nothing, and you and I win out of that.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty terrifying point that's where we are.
It is. You know, it's funny. I was telling somebody the other day, I'm watching from the beginning the show Billions, and a big part of that is the AG and the Southern District of New York, which I lived in New York and I know all about that. But, you know, that they're it's so political. And when I watched it when it first came out, I thought, thought like, oh, it's not that bad. And now I believe that it's probably worse. But as you saw in at least in that show, you would see that they would somebody, some politician or somebody wanted something done and they would just create the crime. And that is what has happened on a massive scale. I mean, the $500 million judgment against Donald Trump is shocking to the court, and that he has to put up that money to even appeal. Like, there's just all this stuff that just seems so, but nobody's doing the part. New York, I left for many reasons. One of them is that, but we do need people like you to start chipping away at some of this stuff that has been become the norm because nobody stopped it.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about some of the AGs out there, Ken Paxton, Bailey, Schmidt, I believe, like these guys are going after big issues that affect the whole country. Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think that they should be focusing just on their state, or should it be kind of a mixture of both? And should AGs all over the country be the ones that are like-minded, be coordinating? Like, what do you see for making big change, not just in Washington state, which we want, but also precedent or whatever for the country?
Yeah, so my preference would be the attorney general focus on his or her state, right? But we're not in a system where that's adequate or sufficient. So when you look at what Bailey and Paxton in particular are doing, they're taking a position and they're saying, I guess, so let me walk it back a second. Our current attorney general, Bob Ferguson, you know, his whole thing that he's talked about pre-Biden era was I sued Trump 90 times or whatever the number was. I won them all, or I won most of them. You know, he talks about my little five attorney organization as the gun lobby. You know, we're beating the gun lobby. So I'm like, dude, if Silent Majority Foundation is the gun lobby for Washington, sorry, your rights are gone. Like, like we are like, you know, again, we've done about three dozen cases with our little staff over 3 years, including Second Amendment issues and what we call Article 124 issues here in Washington state, which are gun rights. If we're the gun lobby, I'm sorry, we're hosed because we are people, we are finite resources. And so the problem is you've had it so skewed politically, you have to snap back. Otherwise you're going to get run roughshod. So when you look at what Paxton and Bailey are doing, while I prefer they focus on Texas and Missouri, it's important that they have these global or national voices where they can sue the Biden administration and say, hey, you colluded with Facebook or whoever it was, whichever day it was, you know, and we're going to hold you accountable, because guess what? You're not going to hold yourselves accountable. I mean, that's not what government does. It doesn't regulate itself. It regulates you and I into its interests,
which
is back to that fourth branch of government. It should not have interests. The government should be nonpartisan. It shouldn't even be a machine. But to the extent that it has to service 300 plus million people, that's another story for another day. But it certainly shouldn't be a partisan thing. It should be what's for the good of the people. And when I look at what Bailey and Paxton are doing, I applaud their efforts. My goal is to get hooked in with them ahead of the election to make sure that we're working in tandem. Obviously, Raul Labrador in Idaho is a close, geographically close, like-minded one. And, you know, I do have some connections. Actually, part of my staff has worked for his team. So we're talking about how can we coordinate with Raul and other folks like that, just to let them know, hey, look, to the extent that we can push Pete's candidacy out in Washington where you're connected, because God willing, I get elected and now it's another voice. I mean, Bob Ferguson, our current attorney general, is presently, he's done suing Trump, obviously, because, you know, he's no longer in office, but he's suing the state of Idaho on its transgender rules and its abortion rules.
Yeah. And then if you look at who's funding him, it's a bunch of NGO billionaire globalists that, you know, this isn't an accident. This is, and they're operatives. They even, because I looked into him when I was looking up you to see who was there and who was there during COVID. And the truth is that they're not working for the people at all. And like you said, I think it's really important for people to understand a lot of these people that we're talking about in these Southern Poverty Law Center as well, they're protecting the institution that was created by the blob. that by any means necessary, no matter who they have to go after and take out. And the whole idea of serving the people, or God forbid, the Constitution, has been completely corrupted. But it is, because for me, I feel like I feel like Washington, D.C. is rotten to the core. I don't see. I'm watching all these cases. You know, a Republican, first of all, looking at the Democrat versus Republican in Washington, D.C. is terrible and horrifying. It shouldn't be that way anyway. But I like the idea of moving the agencies to different places. I believe Trump wanted to move the USDA to Kansas and wanted to move other things out of there to, like, you know, at least the people aren't going to dinner at the end of the day and pretending all day that they're fighting. And then, which is really what happens there a lot with the Uniparty. But I do think it's important to have really strong AGs around the country and governors that are like-minded, that stand together in some kind of block against it, because I don't see, other than going back to the states, I don't think it's fixable inside there. I think the states are so important, which is why I think the attorney generals in every state have to be as important to people in every state other than their own. I keep saying to people, I don't care where people are running. If they have the ability to fix and right some wrongs and bring transparency, one state winning has an effect on other states. So when it comes to Washington state, I guess all of us watched Chaz and what went down in Seattle. I think that was the biggest thing. But what's sad about that whole story is that none of those people were really held accountable at all. And yet what we do have is raids on supposed white supremacists still happening. And, you know, none of those people, I just saw the other day in California, a judge said, you know, we're not putting these, going after these guys for starting a riot when none of these people did. But so there's obviously a lot of damage. So what is your platform in Washington state? It's obviously been very, very gone way left progressive, almost like California. So what are your priorities once you win?
Yeah, the first one is to reassure prosecutors and sheriffs and police alike that I'm a friend. That if you're going to enforce the law, so last year we had a repeal police pursuit. In other words, it's actually my opponent, a lady named Monica Dingra, who's a state senator, as the chair of Law and Justice Committee. She would not allow negotiations on a package to allow police to pursue criminals unless it's in very clear and convincing evidence of a violent felony. And so basically, if you don't know that somebody's life's in danger, the police aren't allowed to pursue them. She's also been very soft on crime. And so when I look at that, my position is, hey, listen, my office actually has a statutory authority to come assist prosecuting attorneys as well as sheriffs upon their request. Every once in a while, we have the ability to come in and say, look, you're not doing your job. We're going to do it for you. And if we get the right governor in there, the governor can actually position me to go take over certain offices. Hey, you got to go prosecute this because they're falling on, you know, deaf ears or whatever the case is. So as attorney general, I have a lot of opportunity to work with the law enforcement, make sure that they understand that, listen, you go catch a guy, I'll make sure that either your PA, your prosecuting attorney is doing the job, or my staff will come in and assist. And so I want people to know that. The second thing is really looking at cases that are anti-constitutional and dismissing them. I know the handful that we're involved in that I believe violate constitutional rights, and just saying, hey, look, tell the deputy attorney general, look, we've worked against each other on the case here. It's going to get dismissed either with your signature on my behalf or with my signature, and your desk will either stay cluttered or clean. And your choice there is stick with me or you can find somewhere else to be.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily want to let go of people. I think there's some very talented people in the office, but there will be folks who will leave before I even get in. Right. You know, they see the writings on the wall that I'm elected in November, election certified at the end of the month. I anticipate not like a mass exodus, but, you know, certainly key players that I know don't want to work for me. And honestly, I'd rather them gone.
Right, of course. I mean, you're not going to, and that's the other thing is what you just brought up is I think the most important. I left Manhattan, and I'll tell you, I have a friend that you know, it's affecting everyone, and these crimes that they're acting like, you know, there's no bail. I don't know if there's where you are. There's no bail. Nobody goes to jail anymore unless they defend themselves from a criminal in New York City, and you're not allowed, obviously, to have weapons there or defend yourself at all, or else you're in big trouble. But on top of that, they're not bringing any of these cases for what they're considering, you know, minor crimes. Well, I have a friend who was by an illegal, actually, bag stolen, knocked on the ground, concussion, whatever. The cops, when they finally come around, because we had to defund the police there too, like you guys did, when they finally come around, they basically say they can't do anything. I mean, that's where we are, and I think it's similar to that in Washington State. So I think we probably also need to go back to actually putting people in jail. And they, what is the whole thing? Just since I have you, what is the rationale behind no bail and not putting people in jail for literal? I mean, even as small as what's small now, shoplifting isn't a crime. But what is the whole rationale? But who's about? What is that what about really?
So, and look, I'm trying to explain something entirely irrational and unfounded to me. So I'll do my best here. But what I understand from the opposition is if you put someone in jail, you're basically marking them, right? You know, you get the scarlet letter, basically. Well, which is probably what they've earned. But you know, so here's a comment, and I need to look it up. I was told that one of my opponents, again, obviously a hard left Democrat, this gentleman, was heard saying, as a former United States attorney, would you rather have someone in your neighborhood that's been in jail for 7 years or 2 years? Well, if he deserves 20 years, I want him in jail and never my neighbor, right? Like, let's be clear about what we want. And so again, it goes back to a social stigma, and it's this perpetuated, created term equity. You know,
And
you and I,
restorative justice.
yes,
Restorative
and you,
justice. That's one of them too.
exactly. And people like you and I believe in equality. And that's what the Constitution promises and protects, is that you and I will have the same opportunities. Now, if you or I screw up our lives and start taking lives, start stealing, like whatever the case is, that's on us. Equity steps in to supplant equality and make it no matter what your choice is, we're on the same footing. And that's not what we can have. We need equality to ensure that we're all held to the same standard, and no bail situation. No, oh, look, if someone's got actually restored, if they're rehabilitated, they should be out once they've completed their sentence, but it shouldn't be start from the bottom and only 2 months on a murder or something like that.
But there's ways to do that that have honestly worked over time as well. And I think people in America are very forgiving. Second chances are a big thing here. And, you know, but no consequences and going down that path. I honestly believe that this is all part of the Yuri Bezmenov, you know, communist manifesto type, you know, demoralization, dehumanization, normalization of just insanity for all the wrong reasons. But at the same time, you know, we do have to realize that the rule of law is bigger than that, because a lot of this goes down to me, liberty. You know, what you're talking about right now, when you think about that, they put life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That was not by design, because every single one of these things that we're talking about, every time that you're doing something like that, you're taking away somebody else's liberty. Every time that they're running after, like putting in these new things for supposedly for, you know, what do they call them now? Marginalized groups. So they want to change laws for this or laws for that, or we're going to change this because the scarlet letter will be on that, or systematic racism. They're actually taking away liberty from all of us, and the idea that we're all responsible for our actions, consequences, and benefits of good actions get benefits or growth or positive outcomes. And this is kind of, it's so much bigger. And I think the AGs, especially you, and you've been working on this very hard to prove that this is what you do, have an opportunity right now to equal out the level, like the playing field, back to where like liberty and freedom and all of that goes back to what it was intended.
From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out MelK Superfoods today.
Yeah, I mean, we are all endowed with capabilities, capacities, and back to your point, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that is endowed from a creator and protected by a constitution.
Right.
And that's the individual's right and responsibility. We gotta remember that word, right? We gotta be responsible for our own growth and our own success. Now, again, where we are held back, you know, for whatever reason, yeah, give that person an opportunity. Give them a scholarship, give them something to get out of the system. But we can't create a system that allegedly makes it on the same platform by deplatforming some and elevating others and then having zero consequences, because the unintended consequences, or probably intended consequences, that it's chaos.
Yeah. And the long-term issue is really that the quality of life for everyone is destroyed again and again and again. And I really do believe we're in some kind of color revolution or demoralization, dehumanization campaign going on now. Last thing, and then, because I want to have you back though to talk about some other stuff besides that you're running, and I think it's awesome. And I want everyone to go check it out, and also to check out Starting Branches of Silent Majority where they are. But now, a long time ago, I had on a couple people, Victor Vila and other people involved in Border 911, that said about 3 years ago, the border problem is not about the border states. The border problem is about every state. And I believe that it has come to Washington state. Are you guys having and you guys also have the northern border there. Do you have an illegal immigration issue right now that is a problem there? And if so, what can you guys do? What can you as AG do about that?
Sure. And then let me add, we have ports, right? We're a waterborne state, right? So we have the northern border, the port border. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, we have everything. We do have everything.
Yeah.
And
that's why,
you know,
people
we're seeing,
move there.
Well, exactly. And we are seeing an uptick of fentanyl and other deaths and other homicides, you know, whether it's just based on the baseless and lawless society that's trying to be created, or illegal immigration, or more than likely a combination of both.
Right.
That's what we're seeing. And so, you know, I've talked with folks, listen, I can make sure that our ports are well protected. I can make sure that our northern border especially is well protected. You know, the problem is getting a legislature who's actually going to buy into, you know, this crazy notion of enforcing crime.
Right.
But at the same time, as long as it's on the books, I can do it.
Right.
I mean, so we are seeing the uptick of those issues. We are seeing those problems that are leaking into our state. You know, we are a very heavily agricultural, you know, Washington apples, right? And
everything.
Let's be honest, it doesn't
That's
stop
how
there.
I think about it. Also, you have a big fishing industry, all kinds of stuff. And the thing too is that a lot of people think of Washington state and they think of Seattle. And Seattle to most people is like the hub of progressiveness, but that doesn't really represent the state. I was up there. I'm actually going up there again. It's a huge state, and a lot of it's rural.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so I reside in a metropolitan area of 315,000 people is the number I've most recently heard. Again, our city's 80,000 people. And again, within about 12 miles, we literally have 500 square miles of government desert land for the, you know, the former nuclear reactor. We have foothills, you know. Yeah. Is there a mall? Sure. We're one of the last vestiges of the United States that still has one of those.
Right. Exactly.
but, you know, I mean, I'm right here on the Columbia River, the Yakima River. We can fish, we can ski, we can all that stuff. It's look, the state of Washington, you have Mount Rainier, you have Hood right south to us, Adams. If you're an outdoors person, yeah, don't move into Seattle because that's metropolitan area. You don't go to Illinois and say, I want to be outdoor and hang out in Chicago, right?
Right, exactly.
But Washington has so many resources. Back to the point, we have ports, we have a ton of ag, we have a ton of outdoor recreation. And kind of wrapping back to the why, you know, obviously my wife and my three kids are the paramount basis for me running. But secondarily, I've put like 5,000 miles on my car going to parts of the state that I've never been in because I've never needed to. And it's like, man, This is gorgeous. I literally told someone this weekend, I was 20 miles south of Canada. I said, I want to bring my wife and kids back. And I want to, whether it's for a campaign event or just to hang out in this really gorgeous, like foothilly mountainous area. And then in the lowlands, you got a
Yeah. Oh
river.
my God.
But
And you're
yeah,
going to be
it's,
traveling a lot. So
I will, and I love it. And
it's
it's great.
great.
I meet
Yeah, I love
great
it too.
people. Yeah, it's a great state, so it's worth saving.
Yeah, and you can tell that you love it, and that matters a lot. A lot of people do become AGs for stepping stones, and you're actually doing it because you have a lot of insight into what's going on there, and that energy and the rural stuff and the water. I mean, you already have all of this. You're like a no-brainer candidate to me. Last question. I helped a lot of people, had people on, went and spoke for people all over the country, especially in Arizona, Illinois, many other places. And the biggest problem in a lot of these places was the RNC, not and the GOP, not the DNC and the attacks, because you can tell what's going on. But how is the Republican Party where you are? Do you feel that you have their support, or are you feeling, because I mean it's a true story that most Americans are pretty aware there's a uniparty that would really like to keep the status quo. And I still believe that America First candidates and will continue to do well. But how is the party system on our side in Washington?
Yeah, I will say this. They're extremely supportive of me. I wouldn't be running for it, but for a call from the chair in last fall.
Good, good, great. I mean, every state's different. I know some states like Florida, they're very supportive. In other states like New York, if you're a Republican, you're going to get to,
Yeah, no, but I will be clear. I can't just rely on the party. It's going to be engaging individuals, engaging groups, folks who are willing to get out the vote, willing to put up the signs, willing to knock the doors, and willing to also financially support us. It's a tremendous undertaking, and I know there are people out there that I've yet to reach, and hopefully this will help. And I'm
Oh, it will
certain it will.
help. It will help. I'm
No.
also going to have you on more because I think you're awesome. I really do. This is a total, because look, I've dealt with so many people over the last 4 years in politics, and you're not a politician. And it's very obvious from the beginning that you're a dad and a person who has, really wants to help. And very specific experience. I always say to people, don't just vote for people because they're a Republican. Go look at what they've done. What is their life experience? I don't want any more politicians. I only want people that have actually done stuff. And you have done more than enough for people to understand. If you know both sides of the agencies as well as you do, you are a no-brainer. So can you tell my audience how to support you? Now, also, guys, if you are in Washington State and you want to volunteer or support him, awesome. But I also want you to tell people how they can get in touch with Silent Majority and possibly bring Silent Majority to where they are as well. So let's tell people both.
Yeah, absolutely. So silentmajorityfoundation.org, silentmajorityfoundation.org is Silent Majority Foundation's website. You can reach us. There's an info button, send an email of like, and especially if someone's got an SMF in a box idea that they want to pitch of here, X, Y, or Z,
Cool.
pitch it. If we can
Great.
do it, we'll do it because we need more of us. As
Awesome.
to supporting the campaign, it's going to be Serrano4AG. That's SerranoForAG.com. So serranoforag.com. Again, there's a box to fill in the information. If folks want to donate, there's a donate link. And then there are my issues and some pictures of me. I got some good ones of family. I've got some good ones
Cool.
of friends. And yeah, it's look, I love doing this. And to your point, it's not because I'm a politician. I'd much rather just be in quiet Pasco doing my job, literally protecting my family. But this is something, it's bigger than me. It's something that needs to be done. And we need someone who's got the character and desire to preserve our freedoms, and that's me.
Yeah, and you've already proven it. That's the other thing. People don't have to wait and see what you've done for, 4 years, if not decades now. You've actually put the people first and have the receipts. So thank you so much. I'm going to put all your links below. Everyone, please go to both websites and bring Silent Majority where you are. They're happy to help you. And this is how we take back America. One person at a time, and you are definitely one of those people to watch. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore, and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you, and that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko is ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko. Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.